Welcome to Shattering This, a program devoted to the fastest growing segment of society. To those who, like me, know that the world's political, religious, military, and economic institutions are corrupt, that they're actually counterproductive, and that none of them can be fixed. Our mission is to look behind the headlines, to know who is working against our interests, to understand why they're doing so. Because, my friends, ultimately exposing and condemning errant and treacherous schemes, whether they be political or religious, isn't hateful, the most caring thing we can do. And therefore, in our concluding hour, we're going to use evidence and reason to explore the Torah. Because its liberating, its enriching, and empowering covenant provides the only reliable answer for you and your family. I would encourage you at any time over the next 3 hours to join this program. Let your voice be heard. Our toll-free number is 877-300-7645. There are times when voices should be heard, and there are times when they should be silent. I am really tired of hearing American politicians tongue-lash Russia. When we first investigated the riots that were taking place in Kiev, we happened upon Putin's initial response to them. He was dismissive of the riots, referring to the people's rather savage behavior as pogroms. Pogroms is a Russian word that speaks of horrific atrocities. It is specifically used to describe the anti-Semitic rage that was demonstrated by the Ukrainians before they were part of the USSR. This goes to the days before World War II and into the days even preceding and following World War I, where the Ukrainians were the most notorious, the most ruthless anti-Semites on the planet. Worse than today's Muslims. And in our investigation, we learned that these are not people that we want to embrace, that we want to uplift. We also learned that they have faltered miserably in their brief stint of independence, that Ukraine has been part of Russia for the past 3 centuries, but in the past 20 years, having voted to break away from what was then the faltering USSR, that they have been very ineffective in governance, having a number of coups, and they have been especially unproductive economically. The country is about the size of France, but its gross domestic product isn't among the top 50 countries in the world. And they are not only wholly dependent upon debt handouts from the IMF or from Russia, and subsidized fuel, which has come thus far from Russia. When it comes to borrowing money for them to continue to promote their selfish indulgences, they always renege on the terms of the agreement. They can't be trusted. They have proven that they can't be trusted, and they're proven that they're unwilling to work. They're unwilling to be responsible. They were vastly better off, as bad as communism was, under the Russians. And no one should be seeking to take responsibility for these people. Now, as it relates to Russia's response, we immediately, upon witnessing these riots in Kiev and considering the world's response to them, looked at the demographics of the Ukraine. And what we found was that Crimea was an autonomous region that was about 70 to 80% Russian ethnically. There was a 0% probability that this was going to turn out any other way than the Crimean Peninsula being reintegrated into Russia. It was obvious. It was even reasonable. Why are we tongue-lashing Russia over such a minor and ultimately predictable move? You know, how is a country that confiscated much of its territory through war, through false pretenses, through grotesque abuse of the native populations, tongue-lashing a country whose population by a factor of 97% said, we want to reintegrate, be part of your nation. There are times that we ought to tongue-lash, but we ought to be right when we do so. We ought to know the facts before we speak. And it's getting to be a broken record with the United States. Before tongue-lashing Russia, this administration tongue-lashed Israel, telling them that they needed to capitulate, to surrender the West Bank, to make themselves imminently vulnerable to the Muslims, or else the United States and Europe would impose horrific sanctions upon them. Before that, we were tongue-lashing China, saying that China could not establish an air defense zone similar to what the United States has and has had for better part of a century. Before that, we were tongue-lashing the Afghanis because we were desirous of being able to keep our invading army inside of their country, and they didn't want us there. So we were tongue-lashing them, telling them how unappreciative they were of all of the great sacrifice we had done to break their country, not once, but twice. Part of that, we had the president drawing red lines, tongue-lashing Assad, accusing him of things he did not do, so that we could justify our bombing of Damascus, something that did not occur because the Russian president bailed out the American, precluding the onslaught of World War III. Before that, we were tongue-lashing both sides in Egypt, the military coup and the Muslim Brotherhood. And just before that, of course, it was the entire world riling against the United States for the grotesque immorality of the NSA. It's time that the United States just shut up. We no longer hold the high moral ground. Everything that we have touched in the world over the last 50 years has made it worse, not better. We need to stand down until we can stand for that which is right. In a story from the Washington Post, they say that the insurgents seeking to topple President Bashar al-Assad, that's a shame, because they aren't insurgents, they're Sunni Islamic jihadists. They are all Sunni Islamic jihadists who are seeking to topple President Bashar al-Assad, and that isn't even their principal goal. Their principal goal is to rid the world of Shia Islam so that the Levant, what they refer to as al-Sham, Greater Syria, can serve as it once did, as the headquarters for a caliphate from which they desire to launch a conquest of the whole world in the name of Islam. Well, according to the United Nations, these Sunni Islamic jihadists have resorted to using suicide bombs, which has become the weapon of choice for Muslims, and that they have targeted mostly civilian areas, which is the tactic of choice for Muslims, which are violations of international law, and yet these same jihadists are the ones that the United States, through Qatar and Saudi Arabia and Turkey, is arming. They're the ones who we have chosen as a nation to ally ourselves with. The Washington Post then opines, fighters from al-Qaeda's splinter group, the Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant, also known as ISIS, executed detainees, including civilians and captured soldiers, in Aleppo, Idlib, and Raqqa in the hours and days before coming under attack by other armed groups, such as the Islamic Front. The Islamic Front is the al-Nusra Front. It happens to be the largest Sunni militant Mujahideen group fighting the proxy war in Syria. Now, what's interesting here is the difficulty that many are having with two aspects of this story. First, the Washington Post, the New York Times, virtually every periodical the world over, has routinely used ISIS, the Islamic State in Iraq, and then in Syria, as simply a de facto representative of Al-Qaeda. They have been called Al-Qaeda. And particularly when they were beginning their terrorist assaults inside of Iraq, the Islamic State of Iraq and Al-Qaeda became indistinguishable in the media. But as I had shared on this program, and as we learned when we ransacked Osama bin Laden's home in Pakistan, and what we have subsequently learned in the media reports and the press releases from Ayman al-Zawahiri, the lone remaining leader of Al-Qaeda, the Islamic State of Iraq was never part of Al-Qaeda, never associated with them, never a franchise, never listened to Osama bin Laden nor Ayman al-Zawahiri. Never. And so now the media is trying to call them a splinter group because they have splintered away, but they aren't a splinter group. They were never part of the same lumber. And so here we are with a liar trying to cover up their previous lie. But there is another line of deceit in this testimony, and that is that this Levant that they are trying to capture needs to be clearly understood. And when we understand it, it will explain Yahweh's prophecy. Back in a moment. Welcome back to Shattering This. As we consider this particular story and of the media having a difficult time describing ISIS, the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria, which many in the media want to call the Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant. Both are actually reasonable because the Arabic al-Sham, which is the name for Greater Syria, does include the countries that are under the auspices of Levant today. If you look up Levant, you will see that it includes the nations Yahweh has described in the prophecy in Yeshaya, Isaiah 17, that we're considering during the second and third hours of this program. Levant includes Syria, Lebanon, Jordan, and Israel. And it is from this perspective of the Levant, of a greater Syria, that the Sunni Islamic jihadists are killing Shia in the proxy war in Syria today. We have Diane having called in from Denver. Which of these stories piques your interest this morning, Diane?
Good morning, Yada. Hope your vacation was great.
It was, thank you.
Good. So anyway, what I was reading was about the majestic divinity. Have you heard anything about that?
No. What is the majestic divinity?
Well, it was in like the 1800s when Thomas Jefferson and all those people were disputing between the Federalists and the non-Federalists. But it was a code that they were going to run the United States under. And then they set up the goddess Columbia as the goddess. And then they were going to do all this good for the world under this goddess Columbia.
Okay.
And So anyway.
Yeah. You know, even America is named after a pagan god. I know that that the individual who drew a map, and it's attributed somehow to this minor individual with his map, but the fact is the name means the land of Amer, and Amer was one of the principal deities of the Aztecs.
Yeah, isn't that just interesting how I'm trying to just piece everything together, you know, mm-hmm. and the story and how we got, why do we get our book, our Bible,
yeah.
and it was rewritten for us and dropped on us in the 1800s when they're doing all this stuff, when it was rewritten by King Ines and
right.
whatever. It's just like it's
yeah.
somewhere now it says you've been handed lies, and I'm trying to figure out, you know, what the lies are. I mean, it's all a lie.
Yeah. You know, when you speak of a majestic divinity, and I'm not particularly aware of the of this in terms of being articulated by America's founding fathers, but when you speak about a majestic divinity as opposed to a god that has one and only name, and when a name that he repeats 7,000 times in his Torah, prophets, and Psalms, Yahweh, and you instead describe a majestic deity, the most majestic individual that is considered divine in most religions, that is actually worshipped as if he were God, is Satan, the adversary. He looks majestic. It's the Adam Weishaupt, who has a huge influence on the founding fathers of America with his Illuminist order. He created a religion of man in light form, as enlightened, to promote the same concept. If you look into the temple of the Freemasons in Washington, D.C., you're going to see the sun's rays coming down in the temple room, showing the majestic nature of their divinity. And so when you speak of this, you're really speaking of the divinity that is the object of worship in Islam and in Christianity, in Hinduism, and with enlightened man, even in socialist secular humanism. So it's a fairly significant concern. I do hope that that Thomas Jefferson isn't encapsulated in this. Jefferson seemed to have his wits about him in terms of recognizing the false nature of Christianity. It's why his collection of from the so-called Christian New Testament only included the words of Yahusha. He removed everything else from it. In fact, in one of his letters, he even acknowledged that Paul was the first to corrupt his testimony. So Jefferson got a lot of it right. So I would be disappointed if Jefferson then turned to a majestic divinity. Although, to his shame, Thomas Jefferson did articulate much of Adam Weishaupt's agenda through the Jacobins. We'll return after the commercial break. Shattering this, as we consider this term, Levant, the primary thing that I would have you recognize is that in the prophecy that we have been focusing on, the one that speaks not only of the United States, but of the demise of Syria and how the proxy war in Syria leads to the destruction of much of Israel, the capitulation of Israel vis-a-vis the treaty the United States is trying to impose on Israel today, that the term Levant, which is what the Muslim jihadists that America is supporting seek to accomplish, it is a unified Syria, Lebanon, Jordan, and Israel. Now, in the case of the Sunnis, they're trying to rid this area of Shia Islam so that all of Islam will be united in a common cause. In the case of the Shia Muslims, they were empowered by the United States invasion of Iraq and therefore are trying to hold on to the increase in influence that they have gained. The term Levant is fairly recent. It is from the French Levant, which means rising. Much of the French language is derived from Latin. There is a Latin word, levare, which means to lift, to raise. And it addresses the point where the sun rises in the east, and therefore, from the perspective of Italy or France, the Levant would be east of them, and therefore it is the area of the eastern Mediterranean shore. Therefore, everything from Syria to Lebanon to Jordan and Israel. To finish this article on ISIS, the Islamic State in Iraq and Greater Syria, they used a children's hospital as their headquarters and also as their detention facility. These jihadists ordered the execution of those that they had captured, in addition to some of the women and children that were in the hospital if they were deemed to be Shia Muslims. In the days and hours prior to the al-Nusra attack on the ISIS fighters, this would be Sunni killing Sunni, the ISIS jihadist conducted mass executions of detainees, thus perpetrating war crimes, according to the United Nations. The number killed, as well as the allegations of mass graves connected to these executions, remain under investigation. On that note, and before we move to the next story, which is Jesus was sexy, we have Glenn calling in from Philadelphia. How are you this fine day, Glenn?
Good morning, Adam. Well, I'm glad I got in before that story.
I'm going to go to it next.
Okay. I originally called to disagree a bit about the Ukraine, but then I have to staunchly agree about the America ought to just shut up. I mean, the parental attitude with which America's State Department and President are addressing these other nations is, like, ridiculously unjustified, you know. It's just amazing. Even the talking heads on the TVs, you know, speak as though, like, right, they have some kind of authority, and they don't even have comprehension of the issue, let alone authority.
Boy, is that ever true? You know, what's amazing is that almost ubiquitously in the media, the journalists, these talking heads in the electronic media, are taking exactly the same attitude, copying the same attitude and approach that the politicians are taking, and, you know, speaking down to Putin and trying to say that this is all because Putin is a bad guy, and this has nothing to do with anything else other than Putin is trying to take what's not rightfully his and to build back up an empire. It is so childish, it is so ignorant, and as you say, I'm fairly certain there's not one of these talking heads, there's not one of these politicians that has actually taken the few hours that it requires to investigate the evidence and know what the history is of this place and these people.
Yeah, like, you know, on the internet, I'm watching some cute woman with poor grammar and an attitude, you know, and it was like, you can't even pronounce things or get your grammar correct, you know. But anyway, yeah, and it's this idea that, and also that the U.S. is like the, speaking for the international community. Well, maybe don't speak for the entire international community, blah, 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 you know.
Yeah, well, I I'm not hearing anybody in South America squeal. I'm not hearing Asia squeal. I'm not hearing China squeal on this. I mean, the number of countries that are squealing are all those that the United States has influence over, and it's limited to those, and they're all with the same rhetoric. But one of the things that we just don't recognize about sanctions is that A, they don't work, and B, they're usually counterproductive. And in the case of imposing sanctions on Russia, I mean, Europe in particular is just screwed, blued, and tattooed. 30% of their power, whether it be gas, oil, or uranium, or even coal, it comes from Russia. And if Russia were to shut it off, Europe would be in the dark.
Well, yeah, and again, you know, my contention is, like, the bullies with glass doors, be careful about what punches they throw, because Like, you know, all they have to do is dump enough U.S. treasuries on the open market at pennies on the dollar, and then it's over. And, and after that, but,
particularly, you know, when we torque the nose of China, as we did just prior to this, you put yourself in a position where quantitative easing is not going to be sufficient to prolong this myth that America is financially solvent. And so we need to be really careful. We're in an extraordinarily vulnerable position, and we're acting as if we were the most prosperous nation in the world when we are the most indebted. We're acting like we're the paragon of morality, and we are instead a nation that's very, very lost as it relates to doing the right thing.
And all this false indignation, you know, like the International Monopoly Money Fund is annoyed because they're not going to just be able to swoop in and hand off, the Ukrainian gas industry to Chevron and the Ukrainian steel industry to the corporations in the German Ruhr Valley, you know. And that's why Angela Merkel's got her nose in there, because the spoils of their subterfuge are to be, you know, these things.
Well, you know, the fact is that the Friendship Pipeline, there are two halves of it. And one of the two halves feeds much of Germany. Most of Germany, particularly the southern half of Germany, is completely dependent upon that pipeline. And so that is the manufacturing powerhouse for Europe. And I'm sure Merkel looks at it, wow, you know, if we gain control of that pipeline, even though it's a Russian pipeline, then look at the influence that we will be able to bear. But the problem is that the gas flowing through that pipeline comes from Siberia and the Caspian Sea, and therefore from Russia. And if the Russians just shut it off, I mean, Germany is in the dark. And the United States is not in a very good position either, because titanium is the metal du jour as it relates to America's military. And we don't have any. We get almost all of our titanium for commercial and military aircraft and weaponry from Russia.
Yeah.
So what if Russia says no? If Russia says no, our military comes to a screeching halt.
And I certainly hope Russia's will to persist in this doesn't center only in one man, because that's a precarious position. You know, I hope there's at least a cadre of people there who, you know, are telling his nationalistic line, such that if he were assassinated or something, God forbid, you know, that the whole thing would just roll over.
Yeah, Putin is a very strong leader. I've got my issues with Putin. I don't like his propensity to encourage and to excuse economic thievery by his support of the oligarchs. But it is through the oligarchs that he is empowered, and so there's a lot of economic malfeasance and of people being imprisoned.
Oh, yeah, no, angels, yeah.
No, and,
yeah,
and his,
there are no angels.
Right, and his total control of the media is also concerning, and what he has basically established is a fascist state in Russia. But Russia as a country is better off now than they have ever been. And his leadership is a significant reason for it, and he is the man that pushed off the onslaught of World War III by resolving the Syrian chemical weapons situation. He is the most rational spokesperson in the world when it comes to the major events that we are witnessing. And so it's a mixed bag. I mean, at this point, as bad as Putin is, I'd rather have Putin than Obama.
Oh, absolutely. You know, and in contrast, you have the ex-convict, multimillionaire communist, Julia Tymoshenko in Kiev, who she's actually of communist sensibilities, but she's using the neo-fascist, neo-Nazi rabble in the streets of Kiev to foment, the rebellion that swept her in. And she's in cahoots with NATO and, with Western influences, to divvy up, the IMF to divvy up the resources of Ukraine like a pie.
Yeah, but you know what's interesting about this is that the people are just are so shallow in their investigation. There isn't there aren't assets to gobble up here. There's liabilities. The Ukraine is $35 billion in debt. The debt comes due in 1 year and 2 years, $15 and $16 billion in each of those 2 years, plus other previous borrowings. There is no treasury to pay any of it back. The Ukraine needs immediately $35 billion just to survive through the year. And at the end of that time, they will need another $35 billion. This is a liability. This is not an asset. These people are not good, hard-working, freedom-loving individuals. This is a real liability. You know that Putin, day before yesterday, after accepting Crimea back into the Russian Federation, said, you know, I have no interest with the rest of the Ukraine. So long as the Ukrainians don't abuse the ethnic Russians in the east and the south, I've got no issue with the Ukraine. I have no interest in the Ukraine. That's the approach the rest of the world should take. We should say, you know, we've got no interest. Do what you wish to do. But it is not our concern. When we try to intervene in these kinds of situations, all we do is make a bad situation worse. That ought not be the case if we'd simply learn from history. We'll be back after the break. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. Yes, I wish to dive into a rather peculiar myth. I guess it does follow in keeping with the majestic divinity. This story from CNN, clearly Jesus was sexy. After all, he was the Son of God. The author of this article writes, I don't mean to be disrespectful, but as I watch the trailer for the new movie, Son of God, which is, by the way, produced by the History Channel, I found myself gawking at the actor portraying Jesus. Diorgo Morgato is one hot dude, she writes. His Jesus looks more like Brad Pitt than the nice man with the beard and all of those paintings. Now, wouldn't you think, Glenn, that if the History Channel, which is ostensibly to present history, wanted to create a historically credible presentation of the life of Yahusha, that A, they would get his name right, and that B, they would have him represented by a Jewish actor, not a Portuguese supermodel?
Well, quite possibly. However, I have to imagine, I often think of Christians talking about how Jesus is often referred to as the second Adam. And I'm thinking God probably made Adam and Shawa pretty good looking because it's, you know, first time I probably broke kind of pretty much Ken and Barbie in some sense, you know, good looking. However, so I'm imagining that Yahusha, you know, if God's going to go to trouble to incarnate, I'm thinking he's going to get the physique pretty well correct, you know, not necessarily rippling, but well-formed human, very symmetrical, very good-looking. I don't imagine, and I really have no idea what Yahusha did look like. You know, that's one of the problems. How do you know you're talking to him?
Yeah. By the way, his physical appearance, of course, is irrelevant, which is why Christianity is wrong. You know, it Christianity has their God as a man. So that's one of the very fact that his appearance is irrelevant is what's wrong with Christianity. You probably heard of him. Certainly in the know. You had a regular conversation with another individual named Yahusha. He got his information. So he was in a position to know. This is what he wrote of the appearance of Yahusha.
He had no former comeliness.
Right. He had no former majesty that we should look at him, nothing in his appearance that we should desire him. So he went on to say he was despised and rejected by others, a man of suffering, acquainted with infirmity. As one whom others hide their faces, he was despised, and we held him of no account. You know, it's interesting, we were having Diane say, have you heard of the majestic divinity of the founding fathers? And here is Christianity still trying to make their God, A, non-Jewish, and B, majestic looking. You know, if your God's going to be a man, then, you know, God needs to be majestic looking. And Yahweh here is saying, folks, if you're fixated on the appearance, and that's where you're trying to find majesty, you aren't going to find it.
Well, yeah, that's clearly the contrary to the purpose of why, you know, Yahweh manifests in the form of Yahshua. Now, the question is, should he have Aleph Sephardic sin or Lily White Caucasian Khazarian?
Well, you know, it's clear that racially he was a descendant of Abraham, of Yishak, and of Jacob through David the Dode, and so, you know, he was Hebrew.
Like a Palestinian.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, he's going to look like whoever is the most the most pure ethnically Jew on the planet today. That's what he would look like. Now, I'm going to throw in something that could be completely wrong, but I've always been humored by it. The Shroud of Turin is perhaps the one relic in all of Catholicism that may actually be accurate. And I say that because of the fact that what it reveals is an irradiated image. It's like a photo negative that is on this tapestry. And the only way for that image to come to exist as it does is it had to be an enormous burst of energy from inside this shroud. And if Yahweh did what he had promised to do, which is to eradicate the physical body of the sacrificial lamb following its sacrifice and being used for an intended purpose on Passover, it is exactly what we would expect. The only thing left of that body would be this radiation image. And we'll talk about that when we return.